Work out there. You do have to understand that those extra steps, they're not authorized by the dance society, but we'll excuse them because this is just a nice fun community event. And thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Becky and Mark. That's awesome. I guess we could do a couple more dances.
Everybody, please move up front and take your seats. We have a lot of fun yet, and we're going to begin.
That's right, everyone. Thank you for coming to Carnation to enjoy your Saturday evening. Saturday is a great day to be at Carnation because you can buy the whole seat anywhere, but you only need the edge. That's right, here in Carnation, you can get dirty and muddy and full policeman's helmet weeds, all sometimes out of the eyes of the County Noxious Weeds Committee. That's right. And here at Carnation Tree Farm, you can enjoy a 100th birthday and buy a holiday tree or a steep piece of cedar swag in the season. That's right, Carnation Tree Farms is the best place to get your holiday clippings this year. Opens after Thanksgiving through the third week of December. Carnation Tree Farms can bring you holiday cheer like no other farm can.
We have the 7 and 8 men up there, but first, before they begin, I would like you to know that this instrument behind me, this really rich bass sound, was produced just a couple nights ago. I was doing quiet time with Julia at bedtime, and all of a sudden I heard these sounds in the basement. Boom, 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 boom. And I went down there, and there was this bass that Byron had made out of things that you can get anywhere at your local hardware store. So let's... I mean, that's pretty cool. So the band that we have up here is, these guys are our local experts on down-home funky music. We've got Denny Redman, and he would like to introduce his two friends here, and the band is called 788. If that rings a bell, then
he
might be ahead of the rest. Okay, go ahead, Denise.
And this is Matthew Wyington over here. This is Russell Hendricks. And I want to thank everybody and also thank the earlier performers. I really enjoyed some of those songs. Most of them, all of them. I remember that dirt road song. I just driving a 59 Cadillac convertible across eastern Montana and the dirt roads and rooster tails climbing way into the sky. Those were the days. Okay, so we're going to start out with The Glory of Love. And was at the end of some movie that Big Bill Broomsey did. Long got two more buds. We got the world all in the charm. And when the world is through with us, we got each other's arms. Even get those blues and lips on. That's the story of the glory of love. Tell me I was building a dream, so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why am I standing in line, just waiting for breath? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now Brother, can you spare a dime? I want some khaki suits, gee, we look swell. What a Yankee we're done. Half a million troops went slogging through hell. I was the kid with the drums. Hey, don't you remember? They called me out. It was a hell of a time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm a cow. Brother, can you spare a dime? Gee, we look swell for the Yankee Doodle Dum. For me and troops went slogging through hell. I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me out. It was hell all the time. Hey, don't you remember? Brother, can you spare a dime?
There's a lot of words in that song.
So, we were talking earlier today about bumper stickers, and I don't know if it's appropriate now, but we're trying to find the best bumper sticker. And so far, Hypocrites Against Bumper Stickers is pretty good. And, Honk If You're on Lithium is pretty good. And Farmers Are Outstanding in Their Field. Can we have more? Okay. Shall we wrap it up?
Do you have one more for us?
Yeah. Okay, one more.
Oh, one more, and then I'm going to hate to send you off. Yeah.
I need a drink of water.
This is my new guitar. $25. Stella. I was on Stella Street, and who about the Marlon Brando of Stella?
Before I came to the Northwest, or came back, actually I was born here, but I lived a lot of places, and one of them was over in Afghanistan in the 60s when they still had a king. And this is a song I wrote about living over there.
Is this a true story?
Oh, I believe it is. Right. Each time it changes, and I'm not sure if I remember the last story I told or the original situation. That's confusing. It's called Chicken Street, which is, I thought, was Soraki Morgan in Farsi. It's about this kid, his name was Ali John. He lived in the same storefront as I did and tried to help me out. And got me acquainted. I used to live on Chicken Street, couple of years staying. I knew a kid on Chicken Street. His name was Alex John. Well, Alex John sold rabbits. The heavy's coming true. I sold other stuff, wonder what that was to some of them. I lived on Chicken Street, Kabul, Afghanistan. I said he could probably lose. He also knew the truth. His English would be good. We'd hang out down on Chicken Street, laugh and drink our tea. Then Ella John would teach me his lingo. Foxy Ella John. Chicken Street! Cabo! I took the train today, things looking so blind. But I miss life on Chicken Street, where we'll have a drink of tea. And Ella John would teach me his lingo. I'll see I've been on Chicken Street. In Cabo, Afghanistan. One day I knew I had it, and it was my friend. Say goodbye, my old friend. Meeting was again. So I just thought I'd go away for it all of the night. But Ally found me anyway. Tears in his eyes. We lived on Chicken Street in Cabo, Afghanistan. So happy to be part of it for once.
I'd like to say, Benny, it's always great to see you. He works at the bookstore in Duval, the used bookstore, the Duval bookstore.
Yeah.
And I love seeing him in the audience at Sound Pulse too. He's so appreciative, and he's a true musician. He doesn't just perform or play to perform. These guys get together all the time just for camaraderie and just the spirit of music. I mean, it's the real play, you know, how to play. In fact, I have a friend, she's 10 years old, and she's really afraid of growing up. I don't want to grow up. Well, why? Well, grown-ups are so, I don't know, boring and serious. I'm like, you don't have to be that way. Just play, you know, pick up an instrument. Every morning, have that be the first thing you do, and you'll stay young forever. So, thanks again, Ben.
Thank you.
That was great. We had Denny and some of the band under another, actually another band called the Budget Funeral Band, which you might have heard. We've been around the valley. We had them over one of our Apple Fests a while ago, and we played under a big pear tree out back, even though it was Apple Fest. Pears would fall down, and it was a clear territory to play. That was wonderful. One of the few clarinet and even bass clarinet lead bands. How many bands do you know that lead with a bass clarinet? Kind of remarkable. It's a good scholarship instrument, by the way, if you're looking for a college scholarship. Bass clarinets, any of them, that'll get you in. You have to be good, right? You have to be good, but a bass clarinet is the thing to play for money. Well, how many of you saw the Harvest Moon?
Yeah.
It's out there right now, isn't it? I know Lisa's raising her hand. They were at the Gallup Fair, and the moon is up there, I'm sure, tonight. The clouds haven't rolled in yet, right? Hopefully not. Anyway, when you get out tonight, take a look at it. You know, Martin and I have set our lives by the tides before. She mentioned our paddling trip down the coast. But I think something like, you know, I've always liked the full moon anyway. Maybe we all do. But I remember as a kid going, leaving my home the first days of fall, harvest moon, the October moon, and walking down the street with a large briefcase full of music books to take piano lessons. And that's really where I think the moon and the fall got into me. Kind of sometimes a frosty evening in the river country of Illinois there, where I spent those single digit years. And I see the big moon coming up through the oak trees and kind of watch it travel along with me as I turn from Sonora Avenue over to Pine and down the street to Mrs. Bush's house, my piano teacher. Now, I was always nervous during this walk, and the moon was calming me, right? But a little bit nervous because I really didn't practice very much, because what you could do is reset the egg timer. You kind of just, you've all done this, right? You turn it back and it doesn't make any noise. It's the mechanical kind we had. And so I practiced 20 minutes or 30 minutes. I loved playing. It went by so quickly. And didn't quite get through all my lessons, but I knew the song I'd really learned, the one or two pieces that I really learned and really loved to play, because I'd learned them and could play them well still, and I was fine playing those over and over again. So I'd show up at Mrs. Bush's house, and she had a sequence of students there, and there was always someone ahead of me. Sometimes it was my sister, who practiced a little more, so it was one of the few things, of course, that my sister had up on me. You know, she was always trying to one-up me, and we were kind of leapfrogging each other that way, but she was really cranking on those piano tunes and the John Brimhall piano classics at the time. And I would sit there listening to the other student finish up. Mrs. Bush had very long fingernails, and she would, like, no, let's do it this way, this tempo, and she would just sight read, she's very good, clear, but clack away. It was clacking noise, as much on the keys as anything. It wasn't, It was definitely a percussive experience. And then she would take the glasses and the chains and hang the glasses by the chain around her neck and kind of sit back and let the student try. And the student would try, and then she'd clack some more. Take it from 61. Clack, 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 clack. Now you try it. It'd be kind of feeling. So she was wonderful, though, at showing me how it should go, developing my ear. But I was pretty nervous. I'd walk in and sit on a very fancy bench, one that you'd find in a formal garden, but it was in her house. And her house was kind of robed with elegant, deep, plush carpeting with tassels and curtains that were ruby red. And as a young boy of about 10, this was all very, well, opulent for our simple neighborhood. But she was in the arts, of course, right? It had to be different somehow. But I would sit on the formal bench waiting, and out of the corner of my eye, really tried not to look at a statue she had there. The statue was marble, and it was a woman with, she had both pinkies extended as though she was greeting, you know, drinking and just salutations of some kind, and she was tugging a sheet across her like this. And her pinkies extended, and you could very much tell that it was just in front of her. And at times, she had, Mrs. Bush, I'm sure, had been dusting, and the statue was a little bit different angle. Of course, I didn't look at the statue, right? I was focused on the piano lessons and listening to the kids. But the marble statue was just there, presenting itself to me, to prepare me for art. And so it was with that prelude that I encountered my dozen a day exercises and my scales and the circle of fifths and going through the sharps and flats of various keys and learning music. So it became very much a complete art in Mrs. Bush's house. And I would leave, trying to take the dozen a days back with me, dozen a day, maybe three a day. You know, maybe kind of attitude. I'd do a couple scales. I know the scale. I'd do it again. I really want to play this piece. I want a Scott Joplin. Let's do something else. So it was difficult to get the basics. And, you know, there weren't that many kids in grade school playing music at that time. Some were playing the trombone that their brother painted red and that kind of thing. They were, you know, everyone was doing something, right, or making some attempt. But they were, we were all kind of more interested, I guess, in the obvious, more funny things of fifth and sixth grade, you know, sound things with armpits. And in that regard, we had a full symphony at our disposal of, you know, all levels of the treble to bass sounds. The whole orchestra was there. And of course, the greatest conductor was our teacher, who had a name that was really difficult for us all to keep a straight face with. It was Mrs., this is true, Mrs. Mittler. So you can imagine what kind of jokes we had going on. Thank you, Mrs. Mittler, yes. And she would try to cue us, she would turn to write something on the board, cue the orchestra, cue the lower brass, right? And the girls would then laugh in sort of the woodwind section of our classroom. And we had this strange little dialogue with our conductor, our teacher. And we always tried to, but like laughing was my goal in grade school, I think. It was what I was driven to do. And we had a new kid come in one time, Stephen. And he was from the apartments in town. We knew that it was from the apartments because they had, he lived on Bobolink Lane. And all the streets of this apartment complex had bird names. So everyone who was from the apartments, he could tell right away. It was Wren Road and Cardinal Way and Bobolink and all the birds. It was kind of wonderful, actually, just to hear that. And you kind of identified a lot with that person from knowing where they were from. And Stephen came into our class, and he loved to laugh. And he really wanted to tell jokes, really quite a bit. And he would laugh and laugh, and he had a wonderfully round face, just like the full moon out there. And his, when he laughed, his eyes were actually shut. He was just a big guy for fifth and sixth grade. And he couldn't run. And he was just out when it came to PE, you know, he was on the sidelines. But he wasn't down about that. He was always laughing and trying to make jokes. And he eventually, his timing was off for a little while because he would laugh when the teacher was looking at him or say, and the teacher was like, turn it down, you know, shake the chin a bit or wag the finger or after school or let's do some more math, Stephen, and do some long division in the corner kind of thing. But he loved to laugh, and I always remember Stephen, and in that wonderful fifth and sixth grade class we had that was just kind of the right mix of the humorists, if you will. We all kind of had a good click together and timed that so wonderfully. The music of laughter, fifth and sixth grade. And I think later on when I moved to Chicago, this kind of feeling I got from that class is probably what took me into trying to be in radio. That's WBEZ 91.5 FM Chicago. Wasn't Chicago, but Chicago. You have to learn that. And of course I got the position immediately, the unpaid position, on the wrong side of the glass, in my opinion. That's the double glass, soundproof glass. So I got to answer the phone calls and say to the important person on the other side of the glass, line 5 is waiting with a call on galvanized wash cans. Line 4 is that kind of thing. I directed the show. And the satellite feeds were just as new at that time, and it was like 3, 2, 1, nothing. Let's go to the reel. And the engineer would be, I don't know, you can't do it, you come in here, don't even get paid, you try to direct the show. It was a difficult time. And I was on the quiet side of that glass. But one of the nice things that I got asked to do, which kind of was starting to feel important again, was they asked me to be a judge at a comedy contest. Because I thought they thought that I knew funny, right? I'm sure that's why, maybe probably in reality, someone just wanted to keep their hair appointment or something. But like, I knew funny, so the intern got to be the judge from WBEZ 91.5 FM, Chicago, to really decide who was funny in Chicago at 2:30 p.m. at a comedy club. Absolutely the worst time of day to try to be funny. I walked from a bright day into this very dark place, you know, the kind of club, right? The ceilings are black, all the piping, the ductwork is painted flat black. The walls are flat black with some artwork for sale for hideous prices for what they were, like a popsicle, you know, skateboard sculpture, like $1,800. It must be good. To be fast? I think so. I'll look at those popsicles. That's an interesting idea. You know, you start to ponder if the price is right. Other than that, it was black. And all the chrome chairs were on the tables in circles. And there was a really large guy eating burgers over at the bar, and really nobody else, and some chaos over near the alleged stage for this. And I sat down. It wasn't quite the event I thought it would be. There weren't that many people there, except comedians and judges. So, one by one, these comedians came up, and they would begin, you know, the routine. And some of them were kind of trying to model after what they'd seen on TV by someone, and they had some moves down. And they would have presentations like they would tell a joke and ha ha. So I come up with that. Wouldn't it be funny if you said that? And there would be a long wait, and one person froze up. They got like half through the joke saying something like, well, you climb up the ladder and the rung broke. And so when the rung broke, well, wasn't the rung, well, the ladder, if the rungs break in the ladder, and he just left the stage. Right? Just left the stage. But he didn't come back. See, it would have been funny if he didn't come back. But he just left. And it seemed like every one of them, except that person, tried to impersonate Jimmy Stewart. Like, I don't know why that was, what they had to do this. I don't know if it was part of their checklist for the humorist of the day. But they would all go, and eventually they would tell a joke, and it might be funny. And that's why the silver hubcaps rolled down, and I ate off my spaghetti off of it that night. So, let me tell you, you know, they were going to some Jimmy Stewart impression. That's so weird. They all had to do it. Charles Lindbergh is the name, or something like that. And they tried this thing. Well, eventually, one by one, they would file on and off the stage, and I would try to mark, you know, 1 through 5, one being low, if they were to do it. And there were two other judges, but I kind of looked at theirs, you know, to try to figure out, because of these were not really registering even with the one level sometimes. I get threes. Three was kind. Yeah. 4 was exceptional. And there's some threes, twos, mostly one. And finally, the very large guy I saw who'd been eating burgers stepped up on the stage, and his name was DJ Flash. I was like, just use your name, DJ Flash. You know, like I'm thinking, if you set up your name like a DJ Flash, then you better be very good, because you just really set a high expectation, and that's going to be lowered immediately when you begin to speak and tell your alleged jokes. That kind of experience, you know. And he was pretty good. You know, he told some jokes and had everybody laughing, and he got like a 3.5, I think it was the average. So he did okay. He didn't win. I don't remember who won. But after this guy, you know, he would laugh and his eyes would close up when he laughed. He was just big. And you know, I remembered Steven back in grade school, how he did that. And I said, afterwards, it was like a DJ Flash. Are you Steven? And he looked at me and he said, Byron. And I said, Steven. And he said, it's great to see you. You always made me laugh in grade school. And I tried to get his comic chat for a while, and he had to go, and he didn't have any contact information. So I've lost contact with him again. Probably won't see him again, you know. But it was wonderful to have that kind of reunion of laughter with him again in Chicago on the very strange, dark afternoon of that comedy club. And I found a note when I was cleaning out our house back in, before my parents moved. And it was from, you know, the kind of notes you're supposed to send to each other to be nice to people in grade school. And I found one from Steven again, and he said the same thing he told me that day. He said, you always made me laugh. Your friend Steven. So I, you know, it's one of those good things that I keep with me. I think of when I see the full moon out there, Stephen's big round face laugh. And it makes me realize, you know, that nothing is really lost. That in terms of harvest, I think it's the great, that is the great beautiful harvest of our lives is you have to have plentiful friends and abundant laughter. Isn't it? That is the harvest moon for me. So after the show tonight, go out there and look at the moon, and have a great night. What is up next here? Thanks so much. It's always fun to go down and think of what brings up memories.
A good friend of ours is passing through town and would like to play a song for us, and it's hard to say no to this really good talent. I'd like you all to welcome Gene Mann. Come on up, Gene. Fifth and sixth grade mind, I was thinking about that marble statue, and how if he'd just gone around a little teeny further, he might have seen a full moon.
It's my version of that.
You could walk around.
My brother was in that same choir, by the way.
You could accidentally walk around the other way.
Yeah, see, that's all I'm saying. Anyway, in that spirit of memories and a wonderful Barnes 100th birthday, I wrote a song recently inspired by a hugely overwhelming task, which was taking on cleaning up a room that I had basically closed the door on and just ignored. And I live in a little two-bedroom cottage, so to have one room that's not being used because you can't stand it, get in the mess of it, is sort of unheard of. It's not helping anybody. So I took on this big project of reclaiming this space, and it's now the best house, the best room in the house. It's incredible. But along the way, a lot of papers and pictures and stuff came fluttering out of corners, and this song came along with that experience. So this is called Memories, Dusty Road. Hey, hey, hey. Can you hear the guitar?
Yeah.
Hey. Walking down memory street, pictures of this and words of that, places and faces so long away, call me back to another day. I smile and cry and find every emotion in between. Memories, dusty road. Now I'm back in time to that giddy life, new love, words of hope in the future. Exciting and scary, heart pounding too. I remember the roller coaster ride as if it were yesterday. Dusty road walk together. Lightning bolts of love and home. Goodness and life, hardship too. Pets and class pictures. Flowers pressed in books. Mama saved my artwork and report cards. A smiley face she drew in the margin. Next to the teacher's remarks. Jean would do better if she applied herself. And stopped talking to her neighbor. It's truly a favorite piece in my collection. Yeah, I save these things, these locks into the air of distant past. Just like my mama did before me, I'll take her sentimental legacy. And oh, to remember the long stretch, that dusty road home. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. Oh. Here I am. I'm home.
Before, during, and after the show, is just how really all of you are, of course, in our lives just by being here, but it's also the whole aspect that there's so much talent in each one of us, you know? It's not just the people on stage in this show or any show. It's what you bring. And I thought of, you know, of course, my friend Steven, he kept that going, right? He believed in himself and got up there and did something fun. And we all have that. And that's really what this gathering celebrates, is how we have creativity within us, you know, and coming together as a community.
So let's stay all together for the next show. Keep in touch. Talk with us. Let us know what your ideas are. And you can sign the sheet in the back with your email. There's a donation spot. There's people who have performed have recordings, and then you can support them that way. If you want to connect with us and you don't remember all the information, all you have to do is type in soundfalls.org now, and you can even do my email, lauren@soundfalls.org, if you can get me. And, or you can Google Sound Falls and you'll see all about what's coming up next. You can maybe learn more about the people who've been here. We have photographs up, and we're going to be having new podcasts on there, so you can hear shows that you've missed. Anyway.
Yeah, we tried to get Luddite.com, but that was taken.
So anyway, let's get everybody here. Oh, I'd like to thank the Chimneys one more time, because that was a truly wonderful experience for me personally. I've danced excellent music, and your knowledge is incredible. Maybe we can have some
casting, right? That's not just for fishing anymore.
So we bet.
You know,
this is a casting community.
It's so
wonderful,
right? Yeah, that's right, by the river casting. But yeah, to everybody who performed, you know, and John over here working on the microphone and monitoring things for the podcast.
John Coates.
You have, like, what we call you, the master podcaster, Grand Flash podcast.
He is an expert.
So thanks, John, for coming in and doing that again. He's been working with us quite a bit. Todd, got that great reading out there. Got Denny and the 788 band. Gene and Martin and Becky and Brian early on, and Mary Ward initially kicking it off with that beautiful tune. And of course, you know, it's really quite remarkable. It doesn't just happen like, oh, let's do a song, let's type up a quick agenda. Maren spends tons of time putting this together. And